I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE amidst renewed escalation in the US-Israeli war on Iran and the IAEA talking about radiation leaks in Europe after a de facto NATO nation bombing of Europe's biggest nuclear power station. It's now 100 days since Washington and Tel Aviv, armed by Britain and the EU, launched the Epstein War, killing Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei and members of his family, as well as massacring 168 schoolgirls at an elementary school with Tomahawk missiles. This after years of genocide in Gaza and ahead of the EU-US-UK armed invasion of Lebanon. Iran's strategic partner, China, the world's largest economy by PPP, is the largest single consumer of energy passing through the Strait of Hormuz. And China was central to discussions at last week's St. Petersburg International Economic Forum in Russia, held after British-guided Ukrainian drone attacks and NATO nation-armed massacres of students and bus passengers. SPIEF in Russia dwarfs the so-called G7 summit in France next week, where unpopular vassal state officials will bow to Trump and a dying Epstein-class empire. China, which just hosted Vladimir Putin, will not be represented there as G7 minus Trump genuflect to Kiev puppet Zelensky, whose strings are pulled by neo-Nazis. Joining me now from Shanghai is the former EU bureau chief and chief Washington correspondent for China Daily, Chen Weihua. Thank you so much, Chen, for coming on Going Underground at last. Before I get to the questions, I've got to ask you about yourself. Retired journalist doesn't make sense because no journalist ever retires, but you've returned home.
Yes, I mean, I agree with you. I'm still actually writing a weekly column, which I've been doing for the last almost 18 years for China Daily. But I'm still, you know, doing a comment on world affairs for Chinese and overseas media. So I'm spending so much more time traveling across my own country and elsewhere too. Yeah, so it's much more fun.
You could probably do a whole TV series about how China has changed while you've been roaming as a foreign correspondent. But let's get to 100 days then, since Trump ordered the murder of Ali Khamenei, members of his family, and of course all those schoolgirls in Menab. EU defense politicians are meeting in Cyprus, where the British RAF were involved in facilitating the genocide in Gaza. How does Washington power look then from where you're sitting in Shanghai, as Chinese people may be looking at the media there about the NATO travails in Lebanon, Gaza, Palestine as they bleed and as the war in Iran continues?
Well, obviously, it's a shocking, not just to the Chinese, I think, but people all over the world. I mean, if you just look at how Germany lose the bid, try to be a non-permanent member of the UN Security Council, you know, it failed largely because of its stance on Gaza, right? I mean, the United States, too, I think has lost hearts and minds all over the world because of its sort of the kidnapping of Venezuela President Maduro, its aggression with Israel against Iran, and its threat to sort of invade Cuba. So, and it goes on and on. I mean, the trade war and not just against China, but all over the world, and the quitting of so many international multilateral institutions and treaties. So the world is unraveling, and because the U.S. Used to claim to be the creator of the global order, the system, now it's obviously the destructor of the global order.
I mean, even in the increasingly absurd Financial Times, which I know you comment on in your Twitter column, as it were, it says Epstein-class label turns into battle cry across the U.S. political landscape. They associate U.S. Hegemonic power, their deep state, with a human trafficker. You believe soft power? We actually did one of Professor Joseph Nye's last interviews here on Going Underground, and hard power. They're both bleeding from the dying empire.
Well, I mean, the U.S. has a loss, I just mentioned that bigly. I actually know Professor Joseph Nye when, unfortunately, he passed away. But, you know, I talked to him multiple times when I was stationed in New York and Washington, D.C. And, but, you know, even he, when he visited Shanghai, I mean, many years ago. And so I think the U.S., I mean, he always liked to thought that how much more U.S. Soft power and how much more U.S. Has a soft power vis-a-vis China. But I think if he speak again today, he would have a very different comment on the fast decline U.S. soft power, because if you look at the international poll, I mean, Israel is sort of one of the most hated countries in the world. I mean, the U.S. global standing is declining. I mean, people, just look at even the U.S. allies. I mean, Europe, for example, or Canada, I mean, which they threat to treat as a 51st state. I mean, those leaders are visiting China. I mean, it's obviously they were coerced by the U.S. administration. I mean, they were, many of them, I would say, the sort of the puppet states in a certain way. I mean, they're being manipulated by the Washington for a long time against China. I mean, especially in the last few years. But now they are sort of waking up. You have Mark Carney talking, you know, about the rupture, middle power, all these things. So the world is changing, obviously. I mean, more people are awakening. They're awakening to the lies those Western nations told for years, repeatedly using their propaganda, you know, smearing China, painting China as a threat to the world. But if you just look at what happened in the world in the last couple of years, I mean, it's not China, it's the United States, it's Israel, I mean, it's the G7, it's the NATO, it's the Western power claimed to be the international community.
Yeah, Mark Carney, of course, former Bank of England governor, who under whose stewardship gold was stolen from Venezuela. But then these people are going to meet Xi Jinping. What do you think she is saying to these world leaders? MBZ was there recently, the UAE, more targeted than any other country except Iran and Israel in the war here in West Asia. What does Xi tell these leaders about continuing U.S. pressure and hegemonic burning embers, as it were? Because countries aren't, you mentioned Carney, I suppose there's the Spanish leader. Not all countries are leaving their neocon beliefs behind.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, they are still much closer, I would say, to Washington, probably than to Beijing. I mean, and because it's not going to change, I mean, dramatically overnight, but it's changing. I mean, that's very important. I mean, but China's you know, philosophy, obviously, China is, for example, is the largest trading partner of 120 countries, some say 130 maybe. Anyway, I mean, China is doing trade with all sorts of countries, regardless of the differences of political system, cultural ideology. You know, it's not like the Cold War years. I mean, we were divided into different confrontations of political blocs. China refused to go back to a new Cold War. I mean, that's why we, you know, even we dislike, I mean, we disagree with some country. For example, the Dutch Navy just conducted a reckless sort of a freedom of navigation in the South China Sea, I mean, which China obviously considers our territory. It's a provocation to China. But still, I mean, it doesn't mean we should cut 100% of the trade with the Netherlands. And so it's not the Cold War. I mean, China today believe, you know, a world which, you know, country could live, have a peaceful coexistence despite their differences, sometimes quite sharp differences, is much better than the Cold War we experienced decades ago.
the Dutch, what were they trying to do? Take Macau? I hadn't seen that. But amidst all of that, we have, like in the New York Times, Europe edges closer to trade war with China. And not a day goes by without breaking news on corporate so-called mainstream media in NATO nations that China is somehow trying to invade Western Europe. What do you think about the thesis that the war, the kidnapping of Maduro, the assassinations of Ayatollah Khamenei and the bombing of Iran, these weren't really wars on Venezuela or Iran at all. They were really part of the war on China. That is the target.
Well, I heard that saying. I mean, there were those sorts of saying, obviously. I mean, if you look at the bilateral relationship, I mean, China has had a good relation with Venezuela, with Iran, with Cuba. I mean, that's why, I mean, Chinese government, I mean, I don't speak for the government, I reply the journalist.
But I suppose as an observer, what's interesting is, are there people in China who say the Chinese government is being far too lax about realizing that it is actually worse than the Cold War? These are military activities targeting Beijing and the Communist Party in the same way as during the Cold War, the attacks were on Moscow and Beijing.
Well, I would say, I mean, it's not a surprise. I mean, someone in Washington, whether in the government or in the Congress or, you know, the China hawks, they always want to provoke or target China in various ways. I mean, it's not news, whether through trade or they try to provoke in the Taiwan Strait, South China Sea, you know, elsewhere. But, you know, the reality is, I mean, the Chinese government has expressed very clearly, I mean, we condemn all those U.S. Israeli aggression against Iran and the U.S. Kidnapping and a military attack against Venezuela and the threat against Cuba. If you read the Chinese foreign ministry spokesman, he said made the same repeat.
Yeah, but it's all words from Wang Yi's spokesperson, isn't it? Venezuela's gone. Syria has gone. Everywhere that China has alliances, strategic alliances with, and relationships with, is being targeted. And quite apart from the economic sanctions, I mean, I should say, my country, Britain, you can't even get a Huawei phone.
I'm going to say this. I mean, because I already mentioned, because China don't look at the world like in the 1960s, in the 70s, when we were in the two confrontational political blocks, you know, and China don't believe there is a military solution to any of these conflicts. I mean, it's U.S. aggression, Israeli aggression, because we believe fundamentally the political and diplomatic settlement is the right way to permanent peace. And that's why China has been calling for dialogue, diplomatic, and political solution. Because I know, I mean, some people would say, oh, how about China? Maybe even, you know, you certainly remember the Korean War and the Vietnam War. China were very much involved, obviously. I mean, sending army. I mean, but it's not the years of Vietnam War and the Korean War anymore. I mean, I mentioned it's not the Cold War years. I mean, we believe if China gets sent more arms or even armies, it's not going to solve the problem. It's just going to mean more destruction in Iran and the region, the whole Middle East, where you are located, you're going to be destroyed. I mean, it's the global economy is going to be jeopardized, and Chinese economy too will be threatened. I mean, many of Asian economies.
I'll just stop you there, Chen Weiwei. I'll just stop you there. More from the veteran China Daily journalist after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the former EU bureau chief and chief Washington correspondent for China Daily, Chen Weiwei. Chen, I interrupted you in part one when you were explaining why military opposition to US hegemonic and Israeli hegemonic power is not the answer. But do you not think that that was kind of the view of Putin after the 2014 coup in Kiev, in Ukraine, that somehow there could be diplomatic means to combat the NATO expansion, and Putin waited too late to realize what exactly NATO had up their sleeves? In the same way, the 300 bases around China, as well as all these geopolitical situations, like, I know it's not loads of China's energy supplies, but it's 14% from Iran, 4% from Venezuela. It's cutting away at it, let alone the economic sanctioning, which they can't really do because they desperately need rare earth minerals and the products China produces.
Well, if you ask the country in the region, because you are based there, I think they would give probably the same answer. They don't want China to join to escalate the fighting because, you know, God forbid, because we are just talking about China is probably supplying arms. But if China was really running to a direct confrontation with the United States, or, you know, there will be a direct confrontation, for example, between Russia and the United States, it will be World War III, and it will be the destruction of humanity and the global economy. So it's exciting for some people to talk about acting on impulse. But I think as a responsible leader, you know, government leader, I mean, a government of 1.4 billion people, a fifth of humanity, you don't act on the interest of one person or three person, but, you know, the 1.4 billion people. I mean, the Chinese.
Yeah, but they need those resources. They do need the resources that are being imported into China. I don't know, maybe you can tell me whether Shandong's refineries are still receiving oil from Iran, despite the Strait of Hormuz closure to NATO nation vessels. The people of China need these resources, and you're saying China refuses to militarily protect the sources that are helping China become so wealthy and powerful?
No. I mean, because, so many countries depend on the Middle East for oil. Do you think they should all send the armies or weapons there? No. I mean, China, as I mentioned, don't believe there is a military solution. Also, you know, China's big goal is national rejuvenation. If you read, China has this 2035 goal of national development, or 2049, which is the centennial of the founding of the People's Republic of China. So that's the big goal of China. We will not let such a military conflict to derail the big goal of national rejuvenation. Besides, I mentioned already, I mean, war is not a solution, will not help. I mean, it's only going to make it worse for this Middle East crisis. I mean, just remember where the neighbor country, the oil facility were all hit. I mean, it's going to take 1 year, 2 years, some even longer to recover. And so that's going to be a hit on Chinese economy and the Japanese economy, the South Korean economy, Thailand economy. So everyone's economy, Europeans' economy. So I think everyone is in jeopardy. So that's why we want desperately to push the United States and Israel and Iran to find a diplomatic, a political settlement for lasting peace.
Many of the countries you just mentioned, of course, host U.S. bases, quite apart from the U.S. bases in Western Europe. It's your understanding that any country that hosts a U.S. military base, I'm speaking to a country that hosts one, of course, many of the GCC countries do, any country hosting a U.S. base makes itself a target of the United States, of the United States' enemies.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, I think from where you are, I mean, the country probably realized that hosting U.S. bases was supposed to help defend them, but it serves the opposite purposes. They actually became the casualties, you know, of reckless U.S. aggression. I mean, so you actually have Israel have this Iron Dome, but you don't have Iron Dome in UAE, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, you know, Kuwait.
We have quite a good one, actually. I've quite a good one here, but generally you see that, I mean, in fact, there are voices in the United States saying that they should reduce their troop presences. Of course, they have tens of thousands of soldiers in Europe, as well as the bases here in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, and
The UAE. Country obviously now realize, have a second thought that hosting U.S. military bases may not that be a great idea, because it just drag them into this unnecessary war, because they would not be targeted by Iran if the U.S. didn't launch, for example, military strike from these bases.
Which, of course, the GCC leaders didn't want to happen in the first place. On the threats against China, I mean, you're a keen reader of all this propaganda media in NATO nations. On the one side, people were trying to pull apart Xi Jinping from Putin. Xi told Trump Putin might regret his war with Ukraine. Front page of the Financial Times. A complete lie.
Yeah, that's already being dismissed by Trump himself, obviously.
Yeah, so, I mean, the lies are everywhere. What about whether it's exaggerated that China needs foreign markets to survive as an economic superpower? Has that been over-exaggerated? In fact, is China struggling to create enough goods for its own domestic market? And would that change the calculus about NATO nations believing sanctions are so powerful against Chinese goods?
I mean, if you look at Trump 2.0, I mean, first year's tariff war against China, I mean, obviously the U.S. has underestimated China's power. I mean, after like 8-9 years, right? The Trump 1.0, when, you know, China is now much more powerful than 8 years ago in terms of economy, technology, in most, you know, renewable EV. So, and just even the military power. So I think, China is the biggest trading partner of 120 countries. China needs global trade. China is the beneficiary of globalization. So we do trade with all countries, regardless, of differences. But that doesn't mean, but you heard this dual circulation policy. So China is making great efforts in expanding the domestic market, stimulating the domestic consumption. There's much to be done. But that doesn't mean China cannot survive with the foreign market. But we still want to grow open global economy, where country can do free trade. I mean, that's still China's mindset. That's, we don't want to undermine. I mean, that's why we've been investing in infrastructure, for example, from Africa to Latin America, in Asia, because we want to build this connectivity. Connectivity for what? To improve the living standards and life well-being of local people. But also, it's going to be good for international trade.
Yeah, and we know how the propaganda media treats China making friends with all those global South countries. Of course, China then has a kind of trump card, no pun intended, in the sense that it has the rare earth minerals that the U.S. military rely on. What's your characterization of what Xi Jinping told Trump when any hint of a threat was against China? I mean, China can just instantly turn off the U.S. military, can't it?
Well, I think the two leaders have quite positive relations. So if you look at Trump's comment on President Xi, it's all good, right? I mean, And I would say, I mean, because the conclusion of the latest Trump visit is sort of the two agreed to build so-called constructive relationship of strategic stability. I mean, of course, much to be defined in detail, I would say. I mean, but Obviously, both sides realize the free fall as we experienced the last few years serves no one's purpose. Neither side likes that. So we need a sort of stability. I mean, at least we're not going to go into direct military confrontation. That's why you have, the two countries held the military consultation in Hawaii just a few days ago. So that's a very positive sign if you remember all these communication exchanges have been cut off in the last few years. They agreed to establish a so-called Trade Council, Investment Council to manage sort of the differences in bilateral economic and trade ties. So all these are positive signs. Obviously, I mean, the expectation is not that high. If we recall, I mean, what the relation worship was like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, and President Obama, which I actually happened to be stationed in Washington during those 8 years. I criticized Obama's policy on China, but you look back, it's almost like a honeymoon for U.S.-China relationships.
And just finally, should anyone care about the G7 in Evian compared to what's happening in the real world, as it were, as those G7 politicians will no doubt be talking about China representing the greatest threat to world security?
No, I just ignore them. I'm a columnist too, so I've written many columns over the years saying that G7 is outdated. I mean, because it's more relevant to talk to the G20s, obviously. And we have the BRICS, the emerging economy. So in 20, 50 years, they are going to be more powerful. I mean, they are already more powerful economically in PPP terms than the G7. So the Global South, is rising. The world is becoming more multipolar. So the G7, most of them former colonial power. Their behavior, their performance in Gaza, obviously, their double standards, their hypocrisy has been fully exposed. So I think they have lost completely trust. It's not just the United States lost trust. I mentioned Germany lost the bid at the United Nations Security Council as a non-permanent member today, simply because it was on the wrong side of history on Gaza, when it continues to supply weapons with the United States, Israel, to slaughter Palestinian women and children.
Chen Weiwa, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to all those of you bereaved or affected by today's NATO nation wars of aggression. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new show. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.